The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
This is the UAB director's chair, and he is the director, and he is in the chair. He is Mark Ingram, the UAB athletic director. He joins us right now here for this wonderful show. You can hear every single Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Central in the morning, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and wherever you get your favorite podcast. And it's one of our most listened to podcasts. The last time I saw this man, I was looking at the back of his head. We were down there for the Big Joe Webb boxing match, sitting ringside. That was fun, wasn't it?
It was really fun. I tell you, any of our fans who have never met Joe Webb, they're missing out. Joe Webb is one of the nicest guys.
He really is.
He is such a good guy. He's always smiling. He's always friendly. He is always gracious. I mean, he's just such a great guy. I will say it was because of that, it was hard for me to watch him box. Because he's such a good guy.
Yeah.
Couldn't imagine him boxing somebody, but it was a ton of fun. It was a great event.
No, it seemed like he was almost too nice of a guy in the ring, too.
Right.
I was like, and there was a guy behind us that kept saying, beat his A, Joe. Yeah. And he must have said it about 55 times. We were laughing. And it was kind of like, I don't know if this is his sport. Because like you said, he is such a nice guy, and he had that really good guy, mantra, if you were, as a characteristic when he was in the National Football League. So good for him if that's what he wants to do. And I know that, he was undefeated as an amateur. He got taken to a draw, which I know a lot of the fans weren't too crazy about. No one likes a draw, man. It's like a nil nil in soccer. It's not fun to watch. Yeah. But we had a good time, and it went the distance. So it was a lot of fun. So, and I hope your son and his friend had a good time as well.
Yeah. They had a good time, and we want to have more events here at Bartow. Now that we built the basketball practice facility for men's and women's basketball, it frees up dates. You know, we used to have to practice both basketballs and volleyball every day in Bartow Arena on one court. So that was a challenging issue from a scheduling perspective. But now, what I don't want to do is go the opposite direction. You know, now that I've eliminated a problem, create a new one. But, you know, for us to have 3 to 5 things a year like that, I don't think is impossible. And so it was a little bit of us, you know, kind of dipping our toe back in the water at doing something like that. And I think we've got some opportunity there. I think it'll be fun.
Great thing about that venue, man, there is not a bad seat in the house.
Right.
And it is certainly, I'm not comparing these two, with their characteristics, but Boutwell used to be kind of the same way. And obviously that's been used a long time. UAB is alive and well. Thank you very much. In Bartow Arena.
Hey, well, go ahead. We've got a new parking garage under construction just on the east side of Bartow.
Yes.
Going towards the hospital. It's just across the street, 1,200 car garage right there that's going to make parking even easier. It won't be ready for this basketball season, but I anticipate probably sometime in this academic year in the spring it gets finished. So from there and beyond, we'll be able to use it for our athletic events or any event in Bartow, which will be great.
Love to see cranes down there on the campus of UAB. He is the UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram. This is the UAB Director's Chair. You can hear the show wherever you get your favorite podcast. We're on every major indice. And, of course, on the TKR app, all you got to do, Android or Apple, just put up TKR, those three letters. It'll take you right to that flaming guitar. It's free. Download it, and you can listen to the show whenever you want. I've got a question I want to ask you that I just did a TV segment on Fox 6 just a few minutes ago. I'll get into that. But first, I got an email here, info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Hey, Tony and Mark, I love the Director's Chair show. I listen every week. Wanted to ask Mark Ingram's thoughts on collaborating with a local brewery to brew a UAB beer and using its beer sales as an NIL collective income. West Virginia and other universities have collaborated with local breweries to use a portion of their sales for specific university brewed beer to help fund their NIL collective. As he also mentions the fact that UAB had a beer called UAB Return back in 2017 and 2018. Would love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, you're right. Thanks for the question. We have had around the country, we've seen some other universities do things like that, partner with any number of businesses, whether it's a local craft brew. That has happened. I even saw, I think it was New Mexico State did one with salsa, which is kind of fun. There's been some of that kind of thing happen around the country, and it's all possible. You know, it's really just a matter of finding the local vendor. I guess they don't have to be local, but the vendor to do that and offer, you know, discounts or whatever it might be. whether it's discounts for the fan or a portion of sales goes to whether it's the university or in this case, the collective, all that's possible. And yeah, we have several craft brews around town, but there's any number of businesses could creatively partner with us or our collective and do this. And we're certainly open to any conversation because it's a new space, man. We've talked about it on the show before. It's a new space where we've got to find a way to not be irrelevant. I don't think we need, you know, millions of dollars. I think that initially some of this scared a lot of people off. Like, you know, we can't do that. We don't really need that. It's hard to pinpoint what do we need in terms of a total dollar figure, but it's about both Andy Kennedy and Trent Dilfer at this point, both acknowledge and Casey Dunn is starting to as well in baseball. It's about player retention. We think we can get good players to come here, but the problem is we're recruiting players that either we saw an opportunity in that if they developed, got stronger, got bigger, got whatever, developed their skills, that they could become a great player that other schools with larger collectives don't have their eyes on yet because they haven't developed. But so now what happens is they come here, we develop them, and then those other schools try to take them away from us and lure them away with their collectives. So we need to have some money to say, even if we can't pay them, school X says we'll give you $100,000 to get in the portal, which is illegal, of course, but that's exactly what's happening. We'll give you $100,000 to get in the portal and transfer to our school. We may not need to have $100,000, but if we could say, hey, look, man, we don't have that, but we could give you 50.
Yeah.
You know, and here's how we would do it. We'll piece it together by giving you this much a month over the next year. And that way they don't have to go make new friends and they don't have to risk, you know, will you or will you not start? Or, you know what I'm saying? You know, the moving hassle is enough to keep some of them at home. So we've just got to be able to kind of ward that off.
Yeah, people are going to be asking about our rock and roll portion of the show. We'll do it again today. Songs that take us back to school. Today, the first day of school, my kids went in. We're recording the show here on August 10th. And by the way, today's also the 50th birthday of hip-hop. And I actually have a song, a hip-hop song, in my songs that take me back to school. I'll bet you can probably guess what that song possibly could be. We'll get
into
those.
Please tell me, I am Wonder Mike, and I'd like to say hello.
Don't be stealing my thunder, brother. We'll get into it here in just a few minutes. Hey, when you were in Utah for the AAC conference meetings, we talked about conference realignment. And you, in a very subtle way, said, Tony, we're not even close to being done with conference realignment. And I was like, really? And you're like, no, things are fixing to be shaken up in a major kind of way. Now, we know the West Coast is known for its earthquakes, but I don't think anyone, even you maybe, thought we'd see the Pac-12, Pac-10, Pac-8, now the Pac-4 just absolutely be dismantled piece by piece. We've got Stanford and Cal maybe going to the Big Ten. Geographically, that doesn't make sense. What are your thoughts on the conference realignments over the last several weeks? It just seems like all hell's broken loose.
Yeah, I mean, are we extending this show to a four-hour show today?
If we need to, yes, sir.
That we're doing?
Yes.
You're right. I don't think anybody would have expected it to be what we're seeing right now. Certainly, I would not have. The members of the Pac-12 that are remaining woke up last Friday morning thinking that they were just evaluating what had been offered to them by Apple TV and trying to decide, you know, as a collective group of schools, do we want to take it or not take it or whatever. And by the end of the day, went from evaluating a television deal to what conference are we going to be in? Mm-hmm. And that's Washington State, Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford. And I've heard some coaches say, you know, hey, is anybody thinking about the student athlete here? And the answer is no. And also, yes. And you think, well, how's that possible? Well, you know, it's going to be longer travel for them. It's going to be harder for their families to come watch them play. Yes, that's correct. But what they're trying to do is maintain the financial viability of their department and keep providing the experience that they've been providing those student athletes. So it will be a more difficult experience in terms of travel, but financially they'll be able to keep, you know, feeding them all the nutritional extras that they give them, and trying to maintain the number of trainers and academic staff that they have that support them. And, you know, this kind of thing, the additional assistant coaches, analysts, operations people within their sport program who all help them, mentor them, guide them, you know, put their arms around them in a family way, with that, to be their family away from their family. There's just a ton of other factors that go into it when we very simply could say, oh, you know, the student athlete's experience is going to be diminished. Well, in some sense, from a travel standpoint, yes.
Yeah.
But by having and ensuring the funds to keep providing the experience in the other ancillary ways that never get talked about, then no, they are trying to maintain that experience. So it's, I don't fault them completely for changing conferences. They're trying to maintain relevance and, again, proper funding to be who they've been and continue to grow. And anybody who says, you know, sort of puts them down for it needs to look back at their own institution's history and see what conference moves have they made themselves, mm-hmm. for the same reason, but it might have been 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 40 years.
And I know, Mark, a lot of people are looking at this as a Chicken Little moment, but we still have another year before all these changes are made. So, and I realize they have to obviously get their future in focus as quickly as possible. How much do you think the 12-team playoff had to play into any of this, or did it? The fact that next year they're going to expand 8 more teams, are people just setting themselves up to get to conferences where they feel like they have a better shot at that, or are these two totally unrelated things?
Well, that is a new that's a conversation now that has come to the forefront, and leagues like the American see this is a great benefit to us. I think what some people believed, and this was part of the surprise in it, with the teams leaving the Pac-12. Imagine this. You were sitting in the Pac-12, you're Oregon, and you were at that moment one of 8 schools in the Pac-12, and the champion being guaranteed a seat in the playoff.
Yeah.
Well, now you've gone to the Big Ten, where now you're one of 18 schools with one guaranteed into the playoff. And I know they feel like them and the SEC will have multiple schools, and I'm not saying that they won't. Surely they will, but in terms of a guarantee, you actually had an easier path with a smaller number of schools in your conference than you do now. So this is about television revenues and long-term viability, and what does the long-term future look like? And both the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference are very close to no longer being conferences and instead being associations.
Yeah.
And so, yes, the college football playoff that's set to sort of reset next year, I think there's going to need to be another conversation about who all gets in now and how does that look.
I think you may be right. And
the American Athletic Conference certainly wants to continue to push to be the very best that it can be and be at the seat of seat at the table with all the other conferences, the so-called autonomy group. We feel like we have every reason to be there and got a lot of evidence to support that. So that's what we're hoping.
That's a great point. He's Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletic Director. This is called the UAB Director's Chair. You can hear it wherever you get your favorite podcast, or you can hear it Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time on the TKR app. Download the TKR app. Great classic rock and roll and great unique programming like this with Mark. We'll talk about our songs that take us back to high school or college coming up here at the end of this segment. I do want to finish up on this particular situation in conference realignment too. Geographics always play into these things. And I remember when the SEC brought in Missouri, they're like, what the hell doing bringing in Missouri? Well, I can tell you it was a big part of it was their market. And Missouri actually played pretty well, despite the fact that they seemed like they always won the East, but they got blown out in the SEC championship game. But they did pretty well in what was an East at the time that was not very, very strong. And now, obviously, it's won the last two national championships. When you talk about the Mountain West the WAC, and obviously they want Oregon State and they want Cal, and they're not going to do that because they don't have nearly the income and the revenue from TV money to pay those schools, not when they were making Pac-12 money. And so now they want to go into the Big Ten. And people are like, they can't be in the Big Ten. They're West Coast. Do geographics really play that much into our conference realignments anymore? You still have 4 or 5 days in between ball games from travel times. Does it make that big of a deal that all of a sudden California would have to travel to Rutgers or to travel to the big house to play a college football game?
Well, I think you've answered your own question. I mean, it ought to matter, but it doesn't. And now the geography is how many different time zones can we have so that our television partners have more television windows. So geography is important in a different way. It used to be how close in proximity are we all that our fans can travel to. Now it's what time zone are they in, and does that grab a different television viewing audience and thus make us more attractive to our TV partners? So the close proximity used to matter when we, like, I know this is a long time ago, but you go 30 years ago when I played, we were on television like two or three times a year. We went at Tennessee as a player, and that was a big deal. That was a lot to say that, like, that was part of the recruiting conversation was, hey, look, we're going to be on TV when we play Florida, Alabama, and Georgia every year. And then we might be on TV with another one, maybe. And then our bowl game, you know, the championship will be on TV and the bowl game will be on TV. That was a lot.
Yeah.
But if you were an SEC fan and you wanted to watch Tennessee play at South Carolina or at Kentucky or at Mississippi State or at Auburn, even Vanderbilt, a lot of these other teams, you had to get in the car and go. And they did too. They had to, if South Carolina was playing at Tennessee, they had to get in the car and drive over. And they did. We did. People did. Now those games are all televised, and it's de-incentivized everyone to travel so the in-game experience has changed, the in-stadium experience, which is why you see literally every single university shrinking their stadium. Now, they're not calling it that. They're adding club seats and suites and luxury amenities, premium seating. So they're changing the experience, but in doing so, they're also reducing the capacity because some of those seat areas are hard to sell. It's just tough because of the number of games that are televised. So it's just a different day in terms of priority.
It's going to be a totally different look by the end of 2024. That's for sure. After the next year.
The other thing that's tough here, Tony, is we make the decision again based on television, which is based almost primarily on football.
Yeah.
But then you go in all sports and it's like, okay, so now we have to take the baseball team three-day series to the other side of the country.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, pray that they don't go from here to the other side of the country and then back, and the following week have to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, and you say, oh, we'll make sure that we don't do that. Well, you can't really. I mean, at some point, somebody's going to have to do that. You can talk about not doing that. But
the people that do the scheduling are going to have a nightmare on their hands for sure. I know how difficult it is just to do the NFL schedule and Major League Baseball. And they do that every single year. You think they'd have a template for that for some of these conferences.
They don't go to school.
Yeah.
They don't go to school.
Exactly.
They don't have class.
Yeah. That's going to be
right?
tough.
And so that's the other piece of it. You mentioned Missouri. So let's look at Missouri when they came into the SEC. Think of this. They had been in the Big 12 North Division, because I was there.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that the Big 12 North was, you would drive 2.5 hours to Kansas, 3.5 hours to Kansas State, 5 hours to Nebraska, 4 hours to Iowa State. And the farthest distance they had to go in their division was Colorado, which was about 8 or 9 hours if you were to drive from Columbia.
Yeah.
Now bring them into the SEC East, and their closest Eastern Division opponent is probably 8 or 9 hours to Kentucky or Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And now they got to go to Gainesville, and they got to go to South Carolina and Georgia. And, you know, Tennessee would be a 12-hour or so drive. I mean, because you brought them up, that's a great example of, and that wasn't that long ago. So they were in a great setup in the Big 12 North for fans. Also, and having one of the greatest rivalries in college sports, which people in our state, I'm sure, would you know, love to disagree or scoff at. But look, this is no disrespect to the Alabama-Auburn rivalry, which is awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome. But if you lived in Missouri or Kansas, that thing goes back to the Civil War.
Yeah.
It is deep-rooted and angry, and it goes back that far. And when Missouri left, it ended.
It does make me wonder how often we're going to see, say, over the next 10 or 15 years, schools leave their conferences because the grass is greener than realize that it was pretty green in the initial conference they were in. I mean, we're seeing that with Colorado, right? They're going back, and it's kind of like maybe because the move just doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal anymore. I mean, when Oklahoma and Texas left, that was tectonic plate news right there. That was huge. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And now it seems like almost weekly we've got some major school leaving their conference to go to another major conference. And, you know, and I hate it for the Pac-12 because it is an iconic. I mean, it's the granddad of them all. It's hard to believe that we're not, the Rose Bowl will never be the Rose Bowl again.
It won't be the same. And one of the things you talk about geography, and look, we're moving into the American here, but Conference USA's footprint that we left and the American Athletic Conference's footprint are not that different.
Yeah.
And so that was a big piece for us, is how different is it? And it's different, but it's not dramatically different. And we were already going to Texas. And again, five schools from CUSA came with us. So we were already going to those places, right? We were already going to Charlotte, Florida Atlantic, North Texas, San Antonio and Rice. We were already doing that. So that didn't change. We did lose the opportunity to drive to Southern Miss and Middle Tennessee, but we picked up the ability to drive to Tulane and Memphis. So it's not apples to apples, but it wasn't dramatically different. We're going to have to go to Philadelphia, which is farther, but, you know, we used to go to Old Dominion.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we'll go to Navy in football. But like I said, we used to go to Old Dominion and Marshall. So is it farther? It's farther. It's not dramatically farther. But you know what? We don't go to UTEP anymore.
No doubt.
So you know, there was some give and take in that. And Trent Dilfer's got a little sign in his office, and this is related to NIL mainly for players. And it says, the grass is always greener, especially when it's fake.
No doubt.
And artificial. And maybe it says artificial, but it's something like that.
And it's always good when you don't have to go to UTEP. He's Mark Ingram, the UAB Athletic Director. He joins us every single week right here on Tony Curry Radio, the TKR app, and wherever you get your favorite podcast, you check us out. We're recording this on August 10th. That coincides with a couple things. I drove my kids to school this morning. We had a hell of a storm that came through. They were about an hour late. So be it for the first day of school. And also, this marks the 50th birthday of hip-hop music. So let's get into some music a little bit, something you actually started several months ago. You want to talk some classic rock. Perhaps some classic rock songs will crop up in what we're getting into today. And these are the four songs that take you back to school, my friend. I know you always have some honorable mentions. I'll let you give a couple of those first, then give me your first song that takes you back, whether it be high school or college.
Well, I'll shrink my honorable mentions. And first of all, I don't think that I deserve the credit nor probably blame for our listeners having to endure this nonsense, our conversation. But
I will take you back and I will replay it, man. Right in the middle of a great UAB question I was asking you, like, can we please talk some classic rock on this classic rock station? I was like, sure. What's your honorable mentions, okay, man? What are some songs that bring back some memories?
Yeah, I'm going to blend this. So it's, I remember as I was in maybe kindergarten, and we had a carpool take us to school. And this was back when you could sit. My mom had a station wagon, and two of us would sit in the way back, not in a seat, not seat belted. This was perfectly okay. We were in the way back, and somebody had to get out and, you know, undo, you know, lift up the back hitch so we could, the hatch so we could get out. And we rotated who had to do that. But I remember when the song by Queen, Another One Bites the Dust, came out, and everybody would just belt out that song. And it was just different and cool. And so anytime I hear Another One Bites the Dust,
that is flipping amazing, because that was one of my four songs that went to my honorable. Yes, because I remember sitting in the band bus coming back from Lima, Ohio, which was the furthest, you talk about having to make trips. It was 3 hours up, 3 hours back for the Lakota High School football team. And I remember hearing that song in the bus, and everyone singing that song on the bus. And for some reason, that just sticks in my brain. That's amazing you brought that up.
Oh, that's funny. Well, and then really anything kind of the same era, anything by the Go-Go's. I always think about Head Over Heels and Vacation and those songs by the Go-Go's. For whatever, I think about my elementary school days and being at school, and I don't know, it's just fun. It was also early MTV time, and I think it's part of that too. I think about those early days. You remember back when MTV, which stands for music television, actually used to show music videos?
It was so stinking good. And the astronaut at the top of each other, it was just so good. Yeah, it was great. I mean, and it was so new, and it was like, yeah, you know, like, we're going to have an all sports network, and then we're going to have an all music network. That's never going to fly.
And now me and my buddies would run in to catch the top five at five. Oh, we had to see that. I wanted to know whose video changed. Who was Run DMC still at the top of this with Aerosmith? You know, are the Go-Go's still in it? Who's in it? Where? Oh, the Cars, they're in it now. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That was great stuff, man. It changed music. All right, give me your first song that takes you back to your school days.
All right, so, well, I mean, those do. So those are sort of honorable mentions slash first ones in the Go-Go. So I'm going to come in with also, you've talked about these guys recently, and who I do love, and I've never seen live, but kind of anything by, but specifically the song Harder Rock and Roll by Huey Lewis.
Oh.
Makes me think of, and you know, they were in Back to the Future. So the Back to the Future movies, and he was, Huey Lewis was a big part of their soundtracks going back in time. And I think, but it just makes me think about school. Anytime I'm thinking about Huey Lewis, I'm thinking about school.
All right. My first one, I only went to college for a couple of years, and I continued my radio career. So I had to move to Louisville, Kentucky, and I never went back to college, and I'm probably not going to. But I got a couple of years at Xavier under my belt. But before I went to Xavier, I was at Lakota High School, and I was kind of a dweeb. I was class clown.
No,
I really was. And so I was a late bloomer. Didn't date any girls at Lakota High School, but was also in the Catholic youth organization. So I got a chance to go out with a lot of good, wholesome women, that were usually a lot older than I was. So when I was a freshman at Lakota High School,
we're talking about nuns now, aren't we?
No, okay. not quite Julie Andrews, but close. So I want to share, I don't know if I've ever shared this story, and I'll have to be careful because I know this is a family show. So I was told by this kid named Jeff Blackwell, I'll never forget him. He was a senior, I was a freshman. He told me that this girl named Jeannie, who played in the flute section in our marching band, had the hots for me. And Jeannie was unbelievable. We used to have these girls called Lassies. They were called Lassie girls, and they were the ones that held the big flags, and they did the batons and all that stuff. Well, she was a Lassie, and so if you were a Lassie, you were it. But she also played flute. And so one night we were coming back from a long trip. We played a football game. Our football team was horrible. And he said, Jeannie wants you to sit next to her on the bus. And so I went back, and Jeannie was sitting alone, and I sat down next to her. And of course, I'm this pimply faced geek, right? And she's like looking at me going like, what are you doing sitting here? And we actually kind of hit it off.
She got like a fan. I'm picturing Christie Brinkley and like a fan blowing her hair.
It was really, really close. It was really, she was very, very attractive, and she was also a senior, and here's this freshman. She didn't even know I was a freshman. And at one point she gave me a peck on the cheek, and I remember, I couldn't believe it. It was one of those moments where you're like, I cannot believe I'm actually sitting next to this girl. Now she's giving me a peck on the cheek. No, I reached over her lap in order to give her a peck on the cheek back, and I accidentally reached inside of her flute case, which if you've ever gotten a flute case, it's filled with this black fur. I wasn't sure what I was touching, to be honest with you, because I'd never had my hand inside of a flute case before. I pulled back my arm and was just like freaking out. And I got up and ran to the front of the bus. And I was talking to Jeff Blackwell, and I said, man, I felt something, and it was furry, and I'm not sure what in the world. I think it was the inside of her flute case. Well, while I was doing that, the song Old Time Rock and Roll was playing. I'll never forget it. Every time I hear Bob Seger's Old Time Rock and Roll, I about fall out. My kids were in the car the other day, and I was listening to Sirius XM Satellite, and Old Time Rock and Roll came out. I just started getting the giggles. I couldn't stop laughing. And my daughter was like, what's so funny? I was like, I will tell you one day, it'll probably be like your wedding day or something when you're 35 or 40. But I can't share this story with you right now. Although if you listen to the UAB Director's Chair podcast, you can hear the story. But that's my first song. That's probably my favorite song. Every time I hear that song, I think about that flute case and that bus ride, and it just takes me. I get goosebumps talking about it. It's great.
I hope that Jeff and Jeannie, if they hear this, that they will also have a laugh about that, and that there's maybe a statute of limitations that run up. They can't.
She was so good looking. I don't even want to look her up on Facebook because I'm afraid I'll be disappointed. I don't want to ruin it. I do not want to ruin that look that her face in Facebook, because you know what happens when you go back and look at women from 30 years ago in Facebook. It's never as good as you remember. So I'm not going to ruin that moment. What's your second song?
They look at us.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. What's your second one?
Yeah, well, I've only got a couple more for you. So, I'm in high school, and I had a teacher who really liked rock music, and he, in an effort to try to teach us some sort of lesson about, you know, staying on the straight and narrow path, the song had just come out by Skid Row, 18 in Life. And he would use that song. He was like, you need to listen to the words of that song. Don't be stupid, you know, and you make a lot of mistakes, and, you know, you're going to have forks in the road, and you're going to make decisions, and, you know, don't do dumb stuff. You guys go out on Friday and Saturday night, you do dumb stuff in your cars, and you're spinning out, and you're spinning your tires, and you're driving too fast, and all this stuff. But so the same thing, 18 in Life by Skid Row. I'm always thinking about that song.
Did it work?
Yeah, it did work. It's worked to this point.
That's good. You should use that one on your kids.
I may.
Yeah, I may. You should. So I had a couple of Technic 1200 turntables and some SP3 PVs, an 800 watt box and amplifier.
Oh,
and I used to do some live things. I did some proms and I did some church socials and things like that. My dad bought me this stuff, and he was trying to get me into the workforce, and I was working three other jobs at the time. And so anyway, so I got hired to do a Lakota High School's prom the year after I graduated. I couldn't do it while I was still there. They wouldn't allow me to actually work. And they were paying me, I think it was like $300 for a two-hour prom. It was good time cash back then. And I remember I had my stuff set up, and I was ready to go. And, of course, everyone was waiting to hear the first song, and the place was packed. We had 1,000 kids in our graduating class my senior year. So there was a lot of kids that went to college or went to high school there. And the first song I played was There's Only One Way to Rock from Sammy Hagar.
Oh.
First of all, that thing sounds really good at 800 watts. And I love the album Standing Hampton. That first side of that album is by far one of the best sides of any album. It's got Baby on Fire. It's got Heavy Metal on it. It's got Can't Get Loose. And it's got There's Only One Way to Rock. And I played that thing about as loud as I could possibly play it. And people looked at me like I was an absolute idiot. First of all, I don't think a lot of kids in high school even heard the song. Second of all, they were wondering why I was so loud. And third of all, I was the only one that got out in the middle of the floor and started dancing. And of course, I was already graduated. I was a freshman in college at Xavier. And here's this freshman from Xavier on the dance floor at a prom dancing to his own music. So every time I hear There's Only One Way to Rock, man, it takes me back to my high school / college days. So that'd be my second song. What's your other one?
Yeah, so the band Metallica really emerged when I was in high school, and initially kind of in my sort of ninth grade kind of zone, the only kids that listened to Metallica were those kids who every day came to school in jeans and black concert t-shirts, and they had like really, really awesome mullets. Yeah. And they all had really terrible mustaches, like very thin, dead squirrel tail kind of mustaches. These were the kids who listened to Metallica initially, but you know, the song Inner Sandman was one that sort of brought them mainstream, and it played a lot in our weight room. And so anytime I hear that song, Inner Sandman, I think about my high school weight room and guys walking around trying to be all tough, you know, and everybody trying to get pumped up and get stronger and everything. And I think it just makes me think about high school football, that song does. And, you know, Virginia Tech uses it as their intro, and it's fantastic. That song makes me think about some high school buddies, Robbie Godfrey and David Eubank, these dudes that were some of my best friends on our football team. And I can just see us all in there. It's like it was yesterday, and I can smell the stench, the kind of sweet stench of that room, the sweat and disgust, you know, the metal and the, just all of it together. And so it's a weird, gross odor that you kind of start to love. And, man, I could, it's like I said, I could be there yesterday when I think, when I hear that song.
All right. So bang, bang, a boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie. Let's rock. Don't stop. Let the, you know, you know what I'm talking about, man. I'm going Grandmaster Flash, man. I got to go Grandmaster Flash. They turned 50 today. Hip hop turns 50 today. Back in August 10th, 1973 is when it hit the airwaves. And that's one song that everybody, if they don't know it, they should know it, and you should know the words to it. Even Mark Ingram knows the words to Grandmaster Flash, the Sugarland Gang. I mean, it was just a fantastic song, Rapper's Delight, man. Rapper's Delight, and it was just the perfect title for that song, and I think that actually came out in 1973, and I think I've still got it on album. I think I've got like an EP, and that thing is like 12 minutes long or something. It was fantastic. But that was one of the first records that I bought when I was doing this little side gig, this little side hustle. I had to go buy all these 45s. People probably don't even know what 45s are, but I just had a stack of
45s.
Yeah, I had a stack of 45s and LPs. We didn't have CDs and stuff back then. And I just went and bought just a boatload of records. And the first one I bought was was Rapper's Delight. I was like, I got to get the Sugarland guy. I got to get Grandmaster Flash. And so that would be my next song. Do you have another?
Yeah, I used to listen over and over and over to Steve Miller Band, Abracadabra.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I had it on an album, and I would, but I had that song on a 45 as well.
You still got your 45s?
Man, it's a no. My parents, when I went to college, they moved to the coast of North Carolina and built their dream house. And 6 months later, it was destroyed by a hurricane. Oh, and all those albums were at my parents' house.
Oh.
Yeah. And they were all ruined. I mean, it was, and my dad being in the radio business, I mean, he literally had hundreds of albums. And yeah, they glued together the water and humidity glued it all together like a giant block.
Oh, that's terrible.
It was terrible. Yeah. Yeah. That's the album covers now as much as I miss the albums themselves.
Oh, that is horrible. That's a horrible story. I'm sorry to hear that. All right. Then my final song was something that it took me back to school only because I was in school when it happened. But my brother had a Kenwood system down in the basement. And he was the one that bought me Diary of a Madman from Ozzy Osbourne for Christmas one year. My dad was like, what in the world are you giving your younger brother for Christmas? Because have you ever seen the cover of Diary of a Madman? He's got blood all over his face and he's got candles lit behind him. It was a great album cover. But he played this song, which was an instrumental song, and it sounded so good because it was so loud. But it was from an album from the Edgar Winter Group. They only come out at night. It was called Frankenstein. And I remember him playing that entire instrumental for me at an 11. It was on, we were talking about Spinal Tap last week. It was at an 11. Yeah. And he said, I want you to put your ears in between the two speakers and hold the speakers to your ears. And I want to turn it up to 11. And of course, I would do, if my brother told me to step on a bumblebee, I'd step on a bumblebee. I did whatever he told me to do. And so I held those speakers and I think I almost went deaf by listening to that part of the song where it almost sounds like a heart beating in Frankenstein. And I remember I think I was a junior or senior in high school, and I remember hearing that song. So every time I hear Frankenstein.
Well, I used to listen. Here's another 45. Got me rolling now on this that I listened to until it about fell apart was Rolling Stones' Start Me Up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just over and over and over again. I was in like third grade or something, and that I'd just play that.
I can, it ended up for crazy too, because that's Tattoo You. I can still see the album cover, that red album cover with the tattoo and the woman's face. I mean, it's just amazing how you can remember those things. It really is. Hey, great stuff, big guy. Thank you so much for being on. Let's do it again next week. We're going to get into some college football next week. We are super close. We're within just now 3 weeks of UAB kicking off their season down at Protective Stadium, North Carolina A&T.
2 weeks from today, brother.
Is it 2 weeks? Only 2 weeks. It's hard to believe. Well, as soon as you get into college football month, it's all good around here. So 2 weeks from today.
3 weeks. You were right.
Is it 3 weeks? 3 weeks from today. So we'll have three more shows to get into it. We're going to have Trent Dilfer on Tony Curry Radio coming up here in the next few weeks. And we got a TV show we're going to be doing on ABC 3340, talking some college football, 10:30 to 11 every Saturday morning. And perhaps we'll have Trent on that as well. But we're looking forward to UAB football in their first season, the inaugural season, the AAC. Mark, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Love it. See you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.